You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today we're speaking with Steve Ross, author of the Isaka Journal column, Information Security Matters. In Steve's Isaka Journal Volume 4 article, Privacy by Implementation and Execution, he discusses data privacy, cyber attacks, and risk assessment. This piece is based on previous articles that Steve has written for the Isaka Journal. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Yeah, pleasure.
So what motivated you to write about the topics that you address in your article?
Well, which one? Let's go back to the beginning. Privacy has been an interest of mine going back a half century. And in the course of the past several years, as I've looked for topics for the Isaka Journal, the topic of privacy has come to front of mind. So I wrote a couple of articles in, I guess it was 2019, one asking the question, why do we need privacy laws? Why don't we just keep all information private without having the need for a law? And then unprivacy by design, which is a play on a portion of the European Union regulation, GDPR, which calls for privacy by design. And in which I made the statement that I don't think that companies, with certain big exceptions that are in the front pages of the newspapers all the time, I don't think anybody sets out to design a system that violates privacy, but that there are market pressures that mitigate against having adequate security and controls put in place to preserve privacy. I said more than that, but those are the key takeaways, I guess. One of the other columnists in the journal, Mr. Ian Cook, an affable Irishman, read that and rose to the defense of privacy by design. And in his column, offered his counterpoint to what I'd said. Now, as I said in the first part of the article that we're talking about right here, I love this kind of stuff. As long as nobody gets mean and nasty and everybody talks at an elevated level, I love a little bit of controversy, and I plead guilty to sometimes writing things that are controversial just to see who bites back and what they bite back about. So he basically believes that it is important to design privacy into systems and that that is the key to achieving privacy in information systems. And I'm synopsizing his point of view, and he may not agree exactly with what I said, but he did offer his riposte. So I offered my counter as well. It's not that we really disagree much, you know, on the important points. We're both very much in favor of implementing privacy in information systems, that the rights of the individual need to be protected, that the most important issues of privacy are those where a breach causes someone personal harm. But I do believe that privacy by design is a dead-end path for a variety of reasons that I know you're going to ask me questions about. But the basis of it is that, as I started to say, I don't think anybody designs an absence of privacy. It gets there because they don't implement privacy well and they don't execute privacy well. And that really what we need, and that's the title of the article, is not privacy by design, what you want it to be, but privacy by implementation and execution, what it actually is. Now I'll turn it back to you.
If an organization does become a victim of a privacy violation, such as a cyber attack, what role do you think human error plays in that happening?
I mean, there's plenty of ways in which privacy gets violated, which doesn't require malice or an attack. It just may be that the information is inadvertently released that shouldn't be released. So the issue is not necessarily cyber attacks. Now, having said that, from what I can tell, maybe no longer the case with ransomware being such a frequently encountered form of attack. But for a long time, most of what we saw as the most frequent cyber attacks were theft of personal information. That is to say, somebody were going after name, address, maybe telephone number, and definitely credit card number, which by itself, all of those theft credit card numbers were by definition privacy violations. I don't think that people necessarily reacted to them that way, but that's what they were. And having said that, whose error? When you say human error, well, there's always human error in there somewhere. Somebody wrote a piece of code that was capable of being hacked. Somebody ran it on an operating system that was capable of being circumvented. Somebody put it in a database that had inadequate controls. So there's always human error behind it somewhere. These aren't acts of God, after all.
Do you think some organizations design privacy measures that focus too heavily on their responses to potential cyber attacks?
I think organizations, both public and private sector, are very concerned about cybersecurity, and rightly so. I think those that deal in personal information, not all do, but those that do deal in personal information are very concerned about privacy, or at least should be. If you ask me, I think you just did, if companies are more concerned about cyber attacks than privacy violations, I'd say yes. But as I was saying before, it in effect comes to the same thing. But the correlation is only there because attackers are going after personal information, primarily, as I say, credit card information and other financial information and health information, because they have a way of monetizing that. The ones, you know, if we look at the history now that we have a little bit of history of violations of GDPR, to my understanding, very few of these are the result of a company or a public entity being attacked, rather that the entity did not do enough to preserve the privacy of the information in the way that they built the system.
So how can organizations overcome the gap between their assessment of risk and what the reality is?
You can't. That's the nature of risk assessment. We try to approximate what the reality of risk will be in some future date. And as with all approximations, there's going to be some gap between what you anticipate and what actually occurs. A good risk assessment will identify a great number of the potential opportunities for misuse of information, let's say. That's what we're talking about. But you can't anticipate everything. There's a popular bumper sticker that expresses the fact that stuff happens. Not what it says on the bumper sticker, but this is a family podcast.
How might agile development affect privacy requirements?
No, I think you've got it backwards. How might privacy requirements affect agile development? My issue with agile is, I have no issue with agile, but it does tend to minimize documentation as a part of the development process. With that said, it is more difficult to determine whether privacy has been designed into systems that are developed using the agile methodology. Remember my point that there's a lot of pressure to get software to market quickly. Agile has been developed precisely to respond to that need. It doesn't remove the need for privacy to be, as I say, designed, sure, but implemented and executed, which is, I think, where, particularly with more rapid development, we're going to need to rely on those, implementation and execution, much more than we ever will for design.
And so what are some of the difficulties of implementing privacy by design, and how can organizations address them?
You should be thinking, as you design a system, of the ways that it would potentially be compromised. What the problem is, and that was what I was saying in the article, and again, in my experience, somebody is trying to develop a piece of software either for commercial purposes or for internal use. They don't set out to say, oh, well, I don't really care if we release private information. Who cares? You know, what'll they do? Sue us? That doesn't happen. People say, I want to develop a really good system that exists within the system of internal controls that we want for this organization. Hopefully they bring in advisory services from information security, from risk management, from internal audit. In other words, the ISACA community. And they develop a system. But there's pressure to get it done. Get it done. We need to get it to market. We get, you know, there's the competitions out there developing the same thing. Our biggest client needs this piece of software tomorrow. No, they needed it yesterday. Okay. Have you ever bought some newly released software? You're lucky if it works to do the things it was supposed to do. To say that it doesn't do the things it's not supposed to do, which is a far, far more difficult testing requirement, it's not a realistic expectation. So software gets onto the market that has holes in it. And some of those holes result in the release of personal information. Now, I want to emphasize that I am talking about most software for most commercial purposes. I am not talking about what is a definite societal problem that is being associated with the loosely formed term big tech, of companies that take the metadata surrounding transactional information and use it for purposes of mostly marketing, mostly advertising, but in effect violate the privacy of the individual. That's a different story. It's a much different set of circumstances, a much different nature of the problem. And as I said earlier, this is something that is a societal problem of what we are willing to accept and not accept. The most common example, I guess, when we're trying to find the best way to get to somebody's house and we go and use a mapping service. Or when we buy something on an e-commerce site, or when we read the latest posts on a social media site. This is a different order of problem and not what we're talking about at all. But in this case, I don't think that there's any failure of privacy design, because I don't think there was any intent to design privacy in the first place.
So Ian Cook has responded to your latest article, saying that he believes privacy and virtue are still worth aspiring to with the help of design. Do you have any other thoughts for Ian?
Well, I think, Abby, you need to put that in context. The last few sentences in the article that we're talking about, I say that Mr. Cook and I both agree that privacy by design is an admirable objective. Everybody ought to do it. But then everyone also ought to live in virtue and abhor sin. I'm in favor of both privacy and virtue, but I remain dubious about their achievement. Now, the point is that this is not going to be an argument that will ever be settled. Sure, we both agree that people ought to try to design privacy into systems. Great. Now, what have you said by saying that? If the entire point is that we ought to be building security and controls and privacy into systems and not layering them on after the fact. Well, yes, that's a very old point that has been well made and I think is generally accepted. But I think there's more at stake here, more in the discussion. And I would only say that we will continue having an amiable discussion for years to come. And maybe every now and again, it'll break out of the pages of the journal.
So do you have any other thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
I have been continuing my own research and thinking and advice to clients about privacy. And I see some really important developments that I think are going to occur in the near future, where the whole concept of privacy, or perhaps of a privacy program, becomes expanded. Rather than go into that in this particular podcast, I'd like to put that aside because it will be the subject of several articles that I will be writing in my column in the future.
Thank you, Steve. That's all we have time for on this episode of the ISACA podcast. If you're interested in learning more, you can read Steve's ISACA Journal Volume 4 article, Privacy by Implementation and Execution.